allow more clearance with the tires and the frame for mud. Tires are a little bit thicker, but they're knobby like a mountain bike tire. And that season is, well, I guess internationally that season is November through January. Around here, people get a little anxious and they want to start racing in the middle of summer, and they do. But we have, and then there's mountain biking, of course, on mountain bikes, and there's cross country racing. There's enduro racing, which is just, honestly, you're timed on how fast you go down a technical course. And we even have short track racing in the Portland area. And then, of course, there's road cycling, and there's a lot of different events that you can do in road cycling. And we even have a velodrome in Portland for track cycling. So,
and you guys support women racing in all those different capacities as well?
Our main focus is to get more women road racing.
Gotcha.
So when people say, like, oh, are you going to do a mountain bike clinic? Are you going to do this clinic or that clinic? The answer is generally no, but there's a lot of us that do participate in all of the different disciplines.
And so, it's great to hear that there's interest out there for different types of riding, too.
So you might go to, let's say, a cyclocross clinic and run into somebody that taught your road clinic in the winter or something like that. So I think one good thing that Let's Race Bikes is doing, besides getting more women racing, is just getting more people aware of the greater community and seeing, like, similar people at similar events. Mm-hmm. So I've run into people that they're like, oh, you taught such and such at this one event in January, and now here it is August, and we're both sitting at the same, like, cross race or something like that.
And I imagine that familiarity, seeing the same people and over again, really helps to build that community.
Oh, yes.
Great.
Definitely.
So how many ladies do you guys have in the organization right now? Like, how many ladies are racing for Let's Race Bikes?
Well, so organizationally, we have about two or three women from each team here in Portland that help us, like, run clinics and stuff like that. We kind of have a leadership structure of about three people. But then when it comes to participants, like, there's no club, no membership fee or anything like that. So the best thing I can do is pull from, we have a nice website. Then we send out monthly and sometimes a couple different times a month newsletters that talk about different races that are coming up or new clinics that we will be doing. And right now we have about 250 or so ladies on that, or
say
people, you know, on that list. And we have a Facebook group, which is, like, pretty active, and Instagram and everything. So we like to let ladies know what races are coming up and clinics and things as such.
Mm-hmm. And is there a range of ages, backgrounds?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have everything from some juniors, you know, kids that are maybe like 16, all the way up to masters racers. I haven't asked anybody who's the oldest, but it's, you know, there is that wide range of ages in cycling that we can support, from juniors to elite women all the way up to masters. And so we're not just focused on, you know, one age, a group of people getting skills up to par. Like, you're only as old as you feel, and, you know.
Yeah. A lot of the women that I've met used to race, you know, and now they just kind of want it. They had their kids, they had their, you know, careers and everything, and they decided, like, I want to get back into this. Or they moved here, so they just wanted to find, like, the community of women that were in the area. So I feel like I run into more of those people that maybe raced somewhere else and just want to reconnect with a group here.
And you guys provide that.
Yeah.
That's great. Why is it important to grow cycling? What for women specifically? Why? What benefit do we have to serve to get more ladies onto the starting line?
Yeah. It's a good question. I'll say that at this point, at least in time, it's not like, oh, people should go into cycling because there's a lot of money to be made from it, you know? I think people should get into it because it's a nice activity. It's healthy. I know for myself, most of my friend group here in Portland, like, I've been here for 8 years, but once I got into cycling, like, most of my best friends are, like, not only, like, on my team, but I look forward to seeing them every, you know, week at a local race or something like that. And it's always kind of sad when it's the winter time and you're kind of, like, off season from road or cyclocross, and you're like, where are all my friends at? So it's a good, healthy, competitive activity to be engaged in. Mm-hmm. You know, like the happiness that you get from riding a bike is exponential, and racing just gives it that nice little competitive edge if you're that type of person.
Excellent. Well, you hinted there about how you started into racing bikes. Can you tell us more about how you got your go?
I've always been, a fairly athletic person. Like, grew up playing soccer and softball and basketball back in Southern Ohio. And then in college, I ended up on our rowing team. And bikes were just something I always did, but nothing that I thought that I could, like, do as far as like racing. And then I moved to Oregon and I'm like, oh, these people on all these fast bikes and all this spandex, how do I do that? That looks like so much fun. And I came across a flyer at River City Bikes advertising PIR, which is Portland International Raceway. And for people who are unaccustomed to that, all through the summer, like every Monday night there's women's races, and like the first or second week of every month they have like a clinic. And so I came, I didn't know anybody, I did a clinic, I, you know, didn't even have shoes that clipped in, I just, you know, wore tennis shoes and everything, and I did a clinic and I did my first race and I won, and I'm like, this is fun, I like this. And so I just made a point then to get, you know, more involved and to join a team and everything. But I definitely, I was very intimidated at first because it's like, I don't know what kind of like necessarily bike or what clothes to wear or what I need, what I don't need. I know I have a helmet. And other than that, like,
see how it goes.
Yeah, see how it goes.
What about you, Heather? How did you get into racing bikes?
Similarly, I was an athlete in high school and college, and I think I finished college mostly just running. I did track and field and volleyball, and when I got done, I was running into hip problems running. So I think, like a lot of athletes, they're like, oh, I'm going to do this cycling thing to cross train and stay in shape. That seems to lure a lot of people over to our side. But I think what happened is I just started riding with a local club. I live in Vancouver, actually, and I started riding with a club and a couple of the guys, actually, who were on that team, because there weren't any other women, honestly, you know, made the suggestion, oh, you should try racing, and that's kind of how it got started, really. And it did not start out very fun. It was pretty intimidating and pretty lonely riding around by yourself and all by yourself on the race, but it got better, and then I kind of found out too eventually what some of my natural strengths were, and then that's sort of what led me to like track cycling or doing some other races, because eventually you start to figure out what you're good at. I can go uphill good. Well, sorry, I'm a teacher. I can go uphill well. I can sprint fast. I can, you know, do this well, that well. And so that's just kind of what hooked me in.
Okay.
And Jen, you mentioned, you know, if you're that kind of person, you said, do you think there's such a thing as a racing personality? Are you the person who, when I'm riding my bike downtown, zooms by me and
yes,
leaves me in the dust? And
before I got started,
laughs at me, you know, behind my back.
I think I definitely started out as a Cat 6 commuter racer, you know, trying to beat people off the line just because I'm a little competitive like that. And so actually getting into racing, a legit race where the other people that are riding bikes near you, they also signed up for that race.
Makes it a little different from just commuting.
Yeah, exactly. I totally toasted them. But, you know, there's a lot of people like bikes out there, and, you know, there are some people that you talk to, and, you know, maybe racing isn't the thing for them. Maybe they just like going on long rides. It's not about competition. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for people who do have that, like, slightly competitive edge and that push to, like, you know, climb that hill faster or sprint past that person and just see that growth and improvement in that challenge, it's a great outlet.
Sure. So it sounds like both of your experiences were different than what you're trying to provide through the Less Race Bikes organization. So how did you determine the best practices to pull together to encourage more ladies to get on?
Well, I think like just kind of the people who we started Let's Race Bikes, trying to figure out like our own paths into mm-hmm. cycling, and then how, so figuring out what those barriers were, and then how do we break down those barriers.
Yeah, I think some of our first meetings, they felt very like therapeutic, because I mean, it was going around Jen's living room. How did you get started? And somebody like, well, I was really intimidated and somebody said something mean to me. And we're like, oh no, they did. Like, oh my gosh, was it me? But it really was like figuring out why don't women want to race? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like you were saying, like sometimes they don't want to race. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or they just like a certain discipline for certain reasons. I mean, we all have friends that just won't race road and they don't want to and they don't have an interest in, but they do everything else.
Just cycle. But, pointing at Abby here. And also another thing, like I think Heather and I might be slightly like the outliers on this, but we have found through other women who we race with that a lot of them got into bike racing by a friend of theirs that was into bike racing. So mm-hmm. a very strong like connection for people is your friend to be like, hey, I think you might really enjoy doing this. Why don't you come on out and try a race? And, you know, that's super nice. But there are also a lot of people who don't have that friend. And so we try to be that friend so that when they show up for their first race, I mean, we have like your first race clinics where we, you know, have people that can ask us questions and we tell them like, well, this is registration. This is how early you should get there. This is like, you know, a good meal to have like before a race day mm-hmm. and everything so that when they get there, like, they can find a friendly face.
Yeah, all those little things that really help mm-hmm. to make it a positive experience mm-hmm. right from the start. Yeah.
Mostly we just wanted to find the reason why, like, what was holding people back and what could we do to facilitate
that barrier. Instead of honestly complaining about not having enough women cycling, like, what can we do to change that?
There you go.
And I love that you're part of this long tradition of women racers, which apparently in the 1880s and 1890s, women cycling and racing was very popular, mm-hmm. and there were some amazing racers. And then in 1902, women were barred from racing after one of the racers had an accident and died. Yeah. So it's good to see this resurgence.
100 years later. Yeah.
You mentioned eating. I'm wondering about, you know, your training, stretching, exercises. How do you keep so fit? And do you eat special meals before the race? Or?
Oh, goodness.
I hope these aren't professional secrets. Your competitors are taking notes.
I eat a large cheese pizza before every race.
Bacon double cheeseburger.
Yes.
Is it vegan, gluten-free, or what?
I'll say for every racer out there, there's not one answer. You know, some people really want to see improvement and they have coaches and they have special like diet and training plans. I sometimes can have a slight OCD personality and everything, so I have the lack of all of that. Like, I know how many miles basically I need to put in a week mm-hmm. and what kind of effort, but I try not to stick too heavily to any like training regimen. Like, I want to have fun doing it. Mm-hmm. If I'm like working really hard and just riding miles and miles and miles and I'm not having fun, I'm not going to have fun racing, and then I'm not going to want to do it anymore. So I have I follow the moderation approach to training. Like, spend some time on the bike. We live in Portland, Oregon. It's a beautiful place. Spend some time out in the mountains, hiking, have fun with friends, like on the bike, you know, have some good laughs and everything like that. But I will say I like a bagel and cream cheese as my pre-race meal. Or pancakes at the Village Inn. So
I know. I know. It is really different for different riders. And some people say like, oh, I have to eat this. And then the next person say, oh, there's no way I can eat that. So there really isn't a magic answer. I would say, though, like, especially with the weather we've been having the last week and oncoming, can't stress enough about drinking a lot of water, you know, really staying hydrated. That's probably the number one thing for really anybody who's outside and active to do. But I guess my breakfast almost all the time is some steel cut oats and some yogurt and honey.
Classic cycling fuel.
Unicorn sprinkles. No,
great. Well, let's pull Hazel Gross into the conversation at this point. Hazel, it's my understanding that you got your start road racing in Oregon under the Let's Race Bike program. So tell us a bit about your experience getting started with the group.
So I actually started out racing. I've raced cross for about 6 years and had always said, oh, road racing, no way. I only had known men that raced road and they didn't make it sound very fun. And so I'd always just shied away from it. And then Let's Race Bikes had a their first kickoff party, and I realized there was a bunch of ladies there that I knew from cross, and they all were like, you realize this is a thing for road racing? Like, I heard that multiple times at the party. And I was like, no, I know, it's just, it's a bike thing. So I wanted to support it, but it definitely put a thought in my head. Maybe I could race road bikes too. Like, I see people I know. So I thought about it, and then I was like, I'm going to try PIR. And I think 3 or 4 times I got all my stuff together and rode about halfway there and went home, because I still had that intimidation, because I didn't have like direct friends that were there. That same thing, I was like, I didn't know who would show up, how it would work, like any of that. And so it just felt really scary somehow. And then Let's Race Bikes was giving away free entries, and I won one to PIR. I still almost went home, but I told myself I had to go because I had this free entry, and I went. I had fun. I did not win my first race. I think I won maybe my third race out there. I raced PIR like every Monday after that for the whole season.
How long ago was that?
That was 2 years ago. Okay. And I was hooked. So that first year I raced PIR, I did one crit, one road race, and one time trial, just to kind of get the feel for it. Joined a road racing team, and yeah, that was, the rest was history.
Yeah, and Hazel and I worked together, and I wanted to ask you, how many races did you complete last year? Because I remember seeing you come to the office like every morning. You're like, I had a race last night.
It was really impressive. Cyclocross, I think I did 60 something races last year.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
It's quite a bit.
I was kind of burned out by the end of the year. I was like, why am I sick of this? So
16 or 60?
60.
Uh-huh. And where do these races take place?
Well, so there's the PIR that we've talked about. Through July and June and part of July, there's races on Mount Tabor every Wednesday night. The rest of the races are all over the state, really. Obra.org has a calendar with a list of all the races all year of every discipline. And so there's races here, there's races in Bend, Corvallis, Eugene. And if you're looking elsewhere, there's also a lot of races that go on up in all over Washington state as well.
I'm glad you mentioned Obra. We haven't mentioned them yet, but they're definitely an integral part of bike racing in Oregon, mm-hmm. as their name suggests. Heather and Jen, how have you guys coordinated with Obra, if in any way, to make sure that women are getting these races, that you know, there's women only categories in some of the races that maybe didn't used to?
Yeah, I'll say we have been working with them and race promoters to provide more like beginner friendly races. Mm-hmm. So even if that's, I mean, mainly it is like having women's poor five field in a mm-hmm. race, and also separating cat three sometimes from the 1-2-3 women. So basically, for anybody who doesn't know how Obra works, is that you start out when you start racing as like a cat five or a cat four, and then based upon like points that you get throughout the season for wins or placements, like you go up the scale. So for somebody who races at kind of like a higher level locally, there'll generally be a cat two. And then if they're on a pro team, they're a cat one. But basically giving women more opportunity to get out there and have a good welcoming experience. I know that I think Obra would put little stars on the calendars next to races that were beginner friendly, mm-hmm. Working with promoters to have also equal payouts for the men and the women and everything has been important as well. And so we work really well with Obra, but at the same time, we do support women getting outside of Oregon and racing locally. Last year, we helped with Anna Grace Christensen, who put together a team called PLRB, or PBLRB, which picked like 5 different women from the local racing scene here and sent them to the North Star Grand Prix in Minneapolis, where they competed in like a week-long stage race. And that was something that we have like a long line here in Oregon of women who got to a certain level and they got to be put on like a composite team that went out there, but that composite team kind of folded. So Anna Grace, instead of just like, you know, complaining about, well, it's a shame that they don't have this opportunity anymore, helped provide women that opportunity to go out there locally. I mean, locally, but to race on a national scale.
Sure, yeah.
And is there a national or international network of women racers, of groups from around the world? And
There's USAC, which is, they have like a large amount of women who do race, and then UCI,
USA Cycling.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the UCI, which is like the governing body for international racing, and there's, you know, UCI racers.
Cool. Hazel, back to you real fast. I wanted to ask, have you had any chances to pay it forward? Like, you were brought into the fold. Who have you since invited to join?
I don't know that I've personally gotten any of my friends into it, but I've gotten to help at clinics since mm-hmm. then, and had women come up to me afterwards and say, you helped at this clinic that I went to, and now I'm doing a race. And I was on a panel too that talked about what to expect at races, and some ladies have come up to me that have since raced. So that's been pretty awesome.
Very good. Great. Lynn, did you have any other?
Yes, I was wondering also, I noticed that there's a U.S. Cycling Talent ID Camp in Forest Grove. And Heather, I believe you were part of it. Can you tell us a little bit about this venture?
Yeah, so USA Cycling does regional talent ID camps for different levels, for different disciplines all over the country. And the one that I participate in is a junior talent ID camp. So riders come from mostly Washington and Oregon. There's actually a team, a junior development team in Idaho that sends a large group of kids over, and a few from Montana. But it's a week-long camp for juniors. I think the ages are 14 to 20 years old, and it's in Forest Grove. But they do have them for adults, I guess. I mean, I'm just telling you from my experience. But it's a week-long camp. And the reason why it's a talent ID camp is that they do a couple of timed events, and that information is kind of saved in USA Cycling's database, and coaches see it, and it gives kids an opportunity to be seen by national team coaches and possibly invited to USA Cycling camps out like beyond, and be invited to race nationally and internationally. But they do have camps like just for women, or just for track, or just for road, or just for mountain, just not in our area.
Great. Well, awesome conversation thus far. We're going to take a quick break here. Don't touch those pre-programmed buttons. We'll be back with more on the topic of women's competitive and endurance cycling in just a few short moments. Stay with us.
It takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail, you can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle, you can ride in the rain. You can take it on a bus, you can take it on a train. Take a ride through the waterfront or down from the zoo. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride the world.
Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show. Jocelyn Gowdy, that's me, and Alon Rabb are your hosts today. We've just been speaking with Jen Levo and Heather Van Valkenburg and Hazel Gross about their experiences racing and encouraging more women to race through the Let's Race Bike organization. Now I'd like to switch gears and speak more specifically about women's endurance cycling with Abby Watson. Abby works for Rafa North America, a well-recognized cycling apparel brand who seeks to not only assure riders look and feel good, but also challenge themselves to push their personal limits on their bikes. Abby, thanks so much for joining us today. So tell us a bit about the Women's 100 ride that you have coming up. Where did the concept come from?
So this is the third year of Raffle Women's 100, and it was born out of an idea that our UK marketing manager, Laura Bauer, had when she went to the Etap, which is like a ride that happens in conjunction with the Tour de France that anyone can participate in, and it's a sportif, so like the European equivalent of a Grand Fondo. Mm-hmm. And she was bothered by the lack of female participants in it. So in 2013, she launched an initiative to get more women riding, specifically the Etap, but also riding 100 kilometers globally, sort of in celebration of women's cycling. So it's always been a global effort to get as many women as possible riding 100K on the same day in July.
And how many women did you have participating last year?
Last year we had... it's a little hard to know specifically, but in terms of registered riders on Facebook, we had 8,200, and that was up from like 3,114 in 2013. So
quite a jump.
Yeah, that's the growth awesome. Has been huge.
And in countries all over the world,
yep.
too, correct?
So awesome. In the first year, I think we had rides in 34 countries, and then last year there were rides in 58 countries.
That's great. And you're organizing the event here in Portland?
Yeah. So in addition to being the finance manager at Rafa in Portland, I'm also a Rafa ambassador and am organizing a ride in Portland that'll take place on July 26th.
So, July 26th.
Yeah.
Tell us more about it. Where should we meet you? What time? Where's the route?
So I would say to check on Facebook for updates on all this. We have a Facebook events page where I'll be updating all this as we go. But we're meeting at the Stumptown on Division and riding out the historic highway and doing a little lollipop off Larch Mountain, mm-hmm. and then riding back. I think we're going to finish at River City.
Oh, nice. And just to clarify, it's not 100 miles, right?
Correct. It's 100 kilometers, so just shy of 63 miles. Mm-hmm. I think that's the right math.
Why did you guys, I mean, a 100-kilometer ride is a fairly well-recognized distance, but why do you think that works so well for this event specifically?
Well, I think it's a great distance because it's a distance that can challenge experienced riders and also be aspirational for people that are new to riding longer distances. So with last year's ride, in a survey we did afterwards, it was the first time that 43% of those women had ridden 100 kilometers. So we've
That's
provided
huge.
A structure, at least in like our Portland rides, to help people ride that distance through training rides and stuff like that.
Excuse me. Can you tell us a little bit about Rafa, what you do?
Sure. Well, my specific job is on the boring side. a lot of tax returns and...
keeping two sets of books and so forth.
Two sets, just one. but Rafa is a cycling apparel brand and also has a big focus on creating beautiful content and just inspiring people to ride more. And Women's 100 is a part of our women's initiative to get more women riding bikes.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have been expanding your women's brand,
yeah,
correct?
It's grown. When I first started wearing Rafa, which was probably in like 2008, I was buying men's product. And then I don't remember the year that we started making women's products specifically, but it started really small as like three pieces and now has grown to be a pretty big collection that I really love wearing.
Yeah, and not just on the bike, right?
Correct. Like there's a fair amount of city wear, too. Mm-hmm. The jeans are my favorite.
I've heard good things about them.
Yeah, they're really great.
Check them out. So what do you believe the positive impact from an event like the Women's 100 has on the cycling community?
Well, I think that 43% growth number is really what means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see women trying new things on the bike, setting new goals, meeting people through the process of all of that.
And you mentioned the training rides.
Yeah.
What have those been like?
Pretty good. We have a weekly ride that's like Thursday evenings. It's been on the smaller side. Mm-hmm. So that's just more of a social, no drop ride up to Fairmount. Keep miles up during the week, but also meet people and just be outside in the summer because it's been so nice. So we have that. And then we've been doing monthly training rides. And those have been sort of growing in distance. And our one coming up next weekend, I think, so July 11th or 12th, is going to be like 50 miles or so.
Mm-hmm.
So those have been a little harder.
Yeah, more challenging.
Yeah.
The Thursday night rides are going to continue up until the Women's 100?
Yeah, up until Women's 100.
Okay. Awesome. And you mentioned Facebook. Where else can ladies go to find more information about all this?
The Rafa website has like a pretty big catalog of information on Women's 100 and rides not just in the Portland area, but around the world. So it's cool just to look at the map and see where rides are registered and everything that's going on. And then it also catalogs all of the posts from Instagram that have been hashtag Women's 100. And another statistic I found was that in 2013, there were 2,661 photos tagged Women's 100. And then in 2014, there were 11,000 photos. So there are a lot of people participating and sharing their stories.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool to see.
That is great. And you've done some traveling around as well with Rafa to meet some ladies that ride in different parts.
Yeah, we have a group of about 20 ambassadors in the U.S., and we manage to get together once a year at this point and meet each other, because sometimes you just know these people online. So we meet each other, ride bikes, learn about the initiatives for the year, and then some other, like, travel with those women once you meet them to do races or rides together.
Mm-hmm. And what is your background as a cyclist?
I rode bikes a little bit growing up. My parents ride bikes, so it was their thing, but I participated maybe once a month or something. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Portland in 2007, and it really became the way that I met people and explored the city. So I never, it all just snowballed. I never anticipated it becoming as big a part of my life.
You race?
Yeah, I have raced road, not as much in recent years, but I do race cyclocross a lot, and I dabble in all different kinds of mountain bike racing, too.
Awesome. And just to confirm, the Women's 100 is not a race, correct?
Correct. Okay. It's not a race. Anyone's welcome to organize their own ride. So while I'm organizing a ride in Portland, there may be other rides happening in Portland on that day. It's just really an effort to get women everywhere riding 100 kilometers on the same day.
Mm-hmm. Several months ago, one of our guests was Shannon Galpin, who has a book and also has been training women in Afghanistan to ride bikes and is the coach of the Afghani national bike team. So you can imagine the challenges for women and girls over there. But what are the other countries that this event is taking place in, Afghanistan by chance?
I haven't actually looked at the map to see, but I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. There's a huge presence in the UK and Europe, because there's a lot of cycling there and it's a UK-based brand. There's a lot in Australia, Japan, other parts of Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
May it grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to see it happening all over the world. So.
But it would be interesting to look at some of the other countries too.
Yeah, so let's take a little detour here and talk about the professional women's cycling scene and how what we're doing here at the local grassroots level is benefiting that and helping to grow. I recently had the chance to read the book, The Road Less Taken by Catherine Bertine, which I passed off to Hazel Gross. And in it, Catherine does a really great job of sharing an authentic peek into the women's professional cycling world. And I thought it was really charming. She did an excellent job conveying the rather extreme challenges that women professional cyclists face with a comedic and a positive attitude. So I'm interested in just kind of going around the table here and hearing your thoughts regarding professional women cycling and how we at the local level can work together to make sure that that aspect of our sport is growing as well. Jen, you want to kick this off?
Sure.
Put you on the spot.
All right. Well, let me just say that I think there has been more of a growth here recently, and I don't know how much I feel a little bit more aware of it, because in the past 2 years, two, 3 years, have had two teammates of mine at Ironclad Cycling who became professional. You have Brianna Wall, who joined Optum Kelly Benefit Strategies, and she's racing over in Europe and, you know, like putting up some good results next to like Marianne Vos, who is just a beast of professional cycling, regardless if you're a man or a woman. And then Anna Grace Christensen also went up to the professional level right now. So I feel like it's so cool to be able to see my friends that I have raced with and worked
with. A little hotbed of activity here in Portland.
Yeah, a little bit of hotbed of an activity. And, you know, by no means are they the first. And Jade Wilcoxon, who is from Talent, Oregon, and raced here in Obra, like, races for the same team as Brianna Wall. So it's really cool to see these women out there doing it. And, you know, just until probably, like, 5 years ago, they didn't even think that that was something that was going to be on their, like, career path. But for them, it's, like, it's now a career. And in the same way that we were speaking about like soccer earlier, like you had the women who won the World Cup in 99, and you know, since like that sprouted off a women's professional soccer team, and you see these little girls out there who are like, wow, like there's this sport that I love and I love playing, and I can take that to the next level and to the next level. Like I remember growing up, I loved baseball, but like all my superstars were like men who played baseball, just because there wasn't like that outlet for women at that like higher level. And it's really exciting to see that growth and to have like some little kid who could just be like, I want to start racing bikes and, you know, maybe I can be a pro. So
yeah, I think you hit on a really good point there. The ability to see somebody that you can more easily relate to doing the sport that you love at that level. And, you know, there aren't a lot of women's road racing that you can watch on TV. So where can we go to interact with that?
So there's some websites where you can watch basically all women's professional racing. Mm-hmm. One is called VeloFocus, and the other is called ProWomenCycling.com. And I think they have a pretty good catalog of videos from past races, too.
Oh, great.
So
there you go. I'll check it out. Yeah. Are there any upcoming races that we need to be tuned in for? There's some women that are... With the tour is about to begin. Are there a group that is riding with the tour this year as they have in years past?
There is actually. They have their own separate race, which I believe is a multi-day this year. Last year was the first year in quite a while that the women did a tour, and it was a single-day race.
Okay.
And this year, I believe it's a multi-day, and it's its own separate race. I believe it'll be, you should be able to find it on the internet mm-hmm. to watch it. I actually just saw Brie yesterday, and she was listing off all the upcoming races, which I've promptly forgotten, but there's a number of big European women's races coming up, multi-day races mm-hmm. To keep an eye on.
Excellent.
U.S. Pro Cycling Challenge in Colorado is having a 3-day stage race for women this year, too.
When is that?
August.
Okay.
And the women's bicycle racing in the Olympics are always very exciting. And,
yes.
You know, the winner is by one tiny little spoke, if that much, you know. So.
Great to see. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's... Heather, I wanted to hear your thoughts on the professional cycling scene. I'm going to put you on the spot, too. Everybody gets put on the spot this morning.
I know. I feel kind of funny because just personally in the last couple of years, I've actually taken a little bit of step back from racing. And so I'm like a little out of the bubble. So I'm like, I don't even know what's going on anymore. But kind of just to quickly back up what Jen was saying, to have the people that you raced against or that you race with and you hang out with, and in some cases some of the people that you mentor are now racing, you know, professionally, it is fun that it's personal, and it's fun that they come home and you get to hang out and go to lunch, or you get to go for a ride or pretend to go for a ride with them. But my thoughts on the professional cycling, I think it's just really important to continue to encourage more women to be out there and be racing, and to tell the general public that, you know, women are racing and you should go out and watch or support. A lot of times,
that kind of seems
a lot of the sponsorship, you know, a lot of the things that prevent promoters from supporting some women's racing is, well, I only have 10 women. I can't afford to give a $1,000 purse at this race compared to a men's race that has 60 men show up and are paying registration versus the women. And so even organizations that can help support women's racing, even if you're just going to, you know, give $100 to a particular event organizer, or if they're asking for sponsorships for a particular event or particular organization, or you know, you hear about things, it's always a good way to support women's cycling. I know we don't want to say like, oh, bring us, you know, more money, but it is a fact that part of the reason why some of the races don't have like equal payout or don't, and when we say payout, we're talking about like prize money mm-hmm. for women's racing, is because of the lower numbers. And so some of the local race organizers do a really solid job of trying to get promoters to specifically support, like, can you help support the women's race of this, or can you help do the
very
women's
specifically
race? Yeah. And so the more women feel kind of appreciated for doing just as much hard work as their male counterparts, then they're encouraged to keep racing, and they're going to be encouraged to maybe race a regional race, and maybe they do well and they get noticed by a team, and all of a sudden, like, now this is kind of fun because I'm getting a reward or I'm getting a kickback from my hard work. Mm-hmm. And so it does kind of help feed into the professional cycling system in a way where, you know, there's a lot of women who go out and do one or two races and that's the rest, you know, that's the last we hear of them because mm-hmm. they, you know, it wasn't fun for them, or I got third place and my prize was a ribbon, or, you know, or, you know, I won a race and it was, you know, there was no prize.
And it seems like early education is very important. I believe you're a teacher, science and English teacher, sixth grade teacher. Do you include any bicycle science or bicycle literature in your curriculum?
I do. I pull it in a lot.
Know about your experience?
Yeah, they do. Maybe in years past when I was a little bit racing a little bit more often and a little bit more seriously, I would have like my race numbers and my national medals sitting up there. So they're like, whoa, this lady knows what she's doing.
Heather's a national champion.
Rainbow stripes in here.
And very modest about her achievements, obviously.
But yeah, I do pull it in a lot. I mean, even in sixth grade, we talk about, you know, motion and forces and velocity and speed and, you know.
And do a lot of the students, boys and girls, ride bicycles?
You know, they do, but really recreationally. So I teach in Battleground, Washington, and the school that I teach at, actually, we have 80% of our students that, we call them, it's a walking school. That doesn't necessarily mean that they walk, but a lot of them ride their bikes, they ride their scooters, they ride their skateboards. So a lot of them do. Like, we've had to install more bike racks at our school just because a lot of them do ride their bikes. And, you know, the kids who do ride more often or are more interested in it, they let you know. Like, oh, I have a bike, and oh, I'm going to do this. Or they go to the skate. We also have a skate park or kind of a BMX skate park in town, too. So, yeah, we'll pull it in quite a bit. And I think they also, like, I'll tell them, you guys, I did this race. It was horrible. What place did you go? I got last place. Like, by how? I mean, I had a mountain bike race, my very first cross-country mountain bike race this spring, and I got dead last by a long shot. And they knew that I was doing the race. And so, you know, you go back to the classroom, and, oh, how'd your race go? It was a great experience. You know, oh, did you win? Oh, no. Did you do well? Not at all. How did you place? I got last place by a long shot. And so they hear me say, you know, kind of struggle through, you know, hey, I failed. Are you going to race again? Well, of course I'm going to race again. Mm-hmm. It's what you do. You ride, you get on your bike, you race your bike. So, mm-hmm. and if, you know, if it's not fun, you don't do it. So, so they kind of get to see someone fail and still love what they're doing at it. So.
Which is an amazingly important lesson in life for all of us. Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, sometimes their other adults in their life aren't necessarily sending that same message. It's like, oh, you didn't do very well. Well, you should probably stop doing that. You know?
Very good. Well, back to Let's Race Bikes for a minute. What upcoming clinics or races should people be tuning into, interested to
I will say probably that we just finished, there was a big stage race this past weekend at Baker City, which was one of multiple races in a series, which is called the Oregon Women's Prestige Race. And it takes a couple different races throughout the over calendar, and, you know, your placings on that go towards, like, the winner's, like, jersey. And I think I'm not quite sure what races are left in the Oregon Women's Prestige Series, or is it all over?
That was the last race.
Okay, that was the last one. Yeah. So we're kind of, when it comes to standard road racing, like, you know, high mileage or stage, it's kind of towards the tail end of mm-hmm. the schedule now in Oregon, and we have a couple of criteriums left in the season. State Criterium Championship is coming up towards the beginning of August, which is the next big one. But it's kind of getting to that point where the road racing season is dying down a little bit and people are starting to, like, build up for cyclocross. And so with the Let's Race Bike schedule, we're kind of also tapering down. But we pick it up usually at the beginning of January with like clinics for like, you know, winter riding, how to like prep yourself for like when it's cold and nasty outside and still get out there. And then we have a full schedule of events that we do throughout the springtime to get people ready to race their first race. And so those events like continue throughout the springtime. And then when we get the summer, it's kind of like, and a lot of us, because we are racing as well as like doing these clinics, like this is, you know, this is kind of our season to race and whatnot. But the big thing is just in the winter, helping people get ready for the season ahead.
And asking about the winter right now when it's 95 degrees is a bit silly, but what kind of advice do you have to cyclists for winter riding and, you know, adverse road conditions?
It's all about the clothes. It's honestly about having the right clothes that keep you warm and comfortable, and that also is sort of a personal preference, I would say. But
yeah, I think Abby might have a recommendation.
There's a gear investment.
And visible, and visible to drivers, obviously. Yeah.
I would say investing in the right gear, which in Portland generally means a really good raincoat and ways to protect your extremities as best as possible, because that's at least for me the big challenge. So
hats,
specific
gloves.
Shoe covers, gloves, and then it does help to invest in your bike a little bit too, whether that means modifying your summer bike to be a better winter bike with heavier tires and fenders, or investing in a winter specific bike that allows for that stuff. It makes a huge difference. And lights. Yeah, you know, whatever you can to be visible.
High vis, you know. If people can see you, then they're a little bit less likely to hit you.
And a support system, because it's not fun to ride by yourself in the rain. So if you can get other friends in on it, it makes it a lot more fun.
Great. Yeah, I always ride in the rain and I'm very careful. And sometimes I've ridden in the snow, but it's hard to see the gray.
Yeah.
You know, so that is a little tricky.
Where can... Oh, Heather, did you have...
Oh, I was just going to say, during the winter, at least last year, Let's Race Bikes had a weekly Monday night ride. And that was just kind of nice. Sometimes it was just a way to sort of get back, reconnect with people. And it seemed to be like the same consistent group of people. But there were three or four women who were new to racing who have really taken off this year.
They got their start at those, those rides.
Yeah, I mean, they just showed up at the rides. And then, you know, as the season gets started, now you've met like seven new people and, oh, we're going to do this race. And now they're interested in it. So they went out and did the race and stuff, too. But we continued those all the way up until the Monday night racing started at PIR.
So that was basically from the beginning of December until mid-April, which is
The weather gods liked Monday nights. We had there was only one night, I think, where it was wet, and we canceled.
And people still showed up.
And even when it seems daunting, it beats riding inside for
me. Yeah,
that's true. Setting up the trainer and just be like, oh,
so many playlists you can make.
Where can ladies go to find more information about Let's Race Bikes?
You can look us up on the internet. And that should be www.letsracebikes.com. And also, we have an active Facebook page and then Instagram as well, Let's Race Bikes. So there we'll post information about upcoming clinics, like sign up for our newsletter, get that email blast that comes out that lets you know what's going on.
Awesome.
And I would say, like, if you got interested in today, don't be too worried that we're a little inactive right now because we're racing. A lot of the clinics have happened and a lot of the pre-race clinics have happened. And so I kind of tell people, if you're poking your eyes on there right now, like November, December seems to be when we get more active in telling people when upcoming clinics are and what's going on and rides and this and that. So I would hate for somebody to go there right now and be like, oh, yay.
Oh, sure.
And then like not get one email.
Well, there's still good. There's still some good information on there on your website.
Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely.
Resources and stuff like that. So
The first Monday of the month is Ladies Night at PIR, and PIR goes through till the very end of August. So there is, if you are interested, there's still time to
come out. Two more chances.
Two more chances for Ladies Night, but every Monday, so you've got eight or so more chances to go try out a race at what I think is one of the most beginner friendly places to get out and give it a go.
One of the very few road races I've done. PIR. I had a great time with it too. Definitely.
There's no hills. So if you totally find hills intimidating, PIR is the race for you.
Headwinds though, right?
Yeah. Oh wait, yeah. And a tailwind though.
True. Practicing pace line.
Yeah. And Abby, remind us again where we can go to find information about the Rafa Women's 100.
Both the Rafa website, so that's www.rafa.cc or Facebook, and I don't know the specific address for that, but just look up Portland Women's 100 and you should find it.
Outstanding. Great. Well, before we wrap up the show today, wanted to take a moment to extend our most sincere condolences to the friends and family of local cyclist Austin Crenshaw, who very tragically lost his life this past weekend doing what he loved, riding his bikes with friends. A memorial service will be held this afternoon for Austin at the Holman's on Hawthorne. Visitation begins at 1 p.m. Austin, rest in peace. Finally, a big thank you to all of our guests on the show today, Jen Levo, Heather Van Valkenburg, and Hazel Gross from Less Race Bikes, and Abby Watson from Rafa North America. We really appreciate the engaging conversation on the current state of women's competitive cycling in Portland and beyond. You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from beautiful Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of every month. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are generously archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. The Bike Show is produced by Alon Robb, Tori Bortman, and myself, Jocelyn Gowdy. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Tammy Dean, our web host, Chris Smith, and our editor, Josh Hetrick. We'll be back next month. We'll be talking about the current state of mountain biking in Portland, and we'll have more news and views from the cycling world. Until then, make it a great day and keep riding your bike.
Thank you very much.
You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on the trail, you can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle, you can ride in the rain. You can take it on a bus, you can take it on a train. Take a ride through the waterfront or down from the zoo. You can take a ride anywhere you want to. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work, you can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky up above and the ground underneath. Get some wind in your hair and some bugs in your teeth. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And that is it for public affairs programming here on KBOO this morning for Wednesday, July 1st. Stay tuned for Jazz Lives. Nick has just entered the house, and we'll bring you some great music. And that's immediately following the KBOO Noon News.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, July 1st, 2015. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson.
In local news, Portland Mayor Charlie Hales, Multnomah County Commissioner Loretta Smith, and Hillsborough Schools Superintendent Mike Scott spoke last night to students selected as interns for SummerWorks. They told the group the community program received sufficient federal and local public money, along with private employer contributions, to hire around 750 summer interns.
Green Drop Garage, a self-described eco-friendly one-stop auto shop, will open its second location near Eastmoreland and Woodstock August 3rd. The group provides eco-conscious car care, recycled oil changes, fresh veggies, and local beer, and has operated at its Central Eastside locale for 5 years.
In national news, a black church north of Charleston burned down last night. This occurs at a time while federal authorities are investigating similar fires in other black churches in other southern cities. Early reports from the FBI indicate the fires could have resulted from lightning strikes in the area.
President Obama is expected to deliver